Big Al says, Gary, the tribunal guideline states where a player pushes an opponent into an umpire, the penalty will be a fixed financial sanction. Well, why has it gone straight to the tribunal, Big Al, if it's as simple as that? Answer me that. I would genuinely like to know.
Well, if you're citing tribunal guidelines, you're not reading it, are you? It's obviously there somewhere.
It's just a guideline. It's just a guide.
It is.
So this has gone straight to the tribunal, Big Al. So we'll see. What do you think will happen?
I can't see him going.
What do you mean you didn't think he knew where the umpire was?
I don't reckon that he knew that he was pushing the player into the umpire.
The umpire's right. He's in fluoro green, sitting right in front
on
of
the
him.
Other side of his direct opponent.
I reckon he saw him.
Hitwood's watching the ball. He's watching the ball, watching where he's running. I don't think that he would have had any awareness of where the umpire was, and I don't think it was deliberate that he pushed him in. If I thought it was deliberate that he pushed him in, or if we think that is the case, well, then he probably has something to answer.
Yeah. When it first happened on Friday night, I thought he was gone, and I was pretty strong in my condemnation. I thought it was, akin to umpire contact for him.
Right.
Now, there's another angle I looked at. Someone had it yesterday at some stage, and you could argue that the Bulldogs player might have changed course a bit, which all contributed to the fact that he may not have been deliberately pushing him in. My point is this. When you do that and there's an umpire in the vicinity, there are consequences, and you need to be aware of them. You may get away with a fine, but if you got a week, wouldn't worry me.
Yeah, I just think that sometimes stuff happens. I mean, we'd like to legislate for everything. But I think there are things that happen in the game because there's 36 bodies running around plus the three field umpires, and the boundary umpires spend some time sort of out there as well in centre bounces, et cetera. So I just think that's going to happen periodically. I just think it's one of those things.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
Worth looking at, worth clarifying, but one of those things.
But when you say there's 36, I don't want to be argumentative, but I will be. When you say there's 36 players on the ground, there's only three involved there. They had a good patch of dirt to themselves, just the three of them.
But the things that we ask the modern player to consider when they're going into contests, to watch the play and to focus on what they're doing, and that we have to consider where the umpires are at all times as well. I mean, this is not.
No, that's exactly what we've ever had. That's exactly what we ask them to do, to consider where the umpires are at all times. Yes, that's
well, I understand
it.
But the focus is always like, I mean, we've played the game, but not everyone has played at the highest level. But if you've played a game of footy, it's really hard to take your focus off exactly where the play is because that's where you're watching. So whether it's 5 metres away or 50 metres away from you, invariably you're watching what's happening at the contest so that you can make decisions on where you position yourself or how to attack the contest. Mm. Often that is at the absence of you've got some spatial awareness of the bodies around you, but to say, well, that's my direct opponent, that's a teammate, that's an umpire, sometimes that can be difficult to do.
Yeah. No, I agree with that, but not in that instance. There's only him, a bloke in bright green, and his opponent. In white.
So there's no possibility that you reckon that the umpire was 100, like directly the opposite side of his direct opponent?
No.
Mm, all right. Maybe I have to have a look at it a bit closer, I guess, because I just can't see it.
I will too. I'll have another look at it as well just to make sure. So there's nothing like a contentious tribunal or a potential tribunal or an umpiring decision to fire up. It's 50-50 split down the middle. Gary, you're grabbing onto something that isn't there. Fine. It's just worth a fine. You can't seriously think that act is worth anything for pushing someone. And, Bucks, you've had another look at it?
Yeah, I got this is a pull your socks up as well. Clint from Druin. I once took a hanger on an umpire playing for Druin because he was in prime position. I got 2 weeks.
that's probably with it. You've had a look at the new angle. What did you think?
There's a little bit to look at there because I reckon where Hipwood was running – he would have known that the umpire was there.
Yes, and thank you.
But at the same time, how do you say that he intended to push him into the umpire? It's nearly impossible to do that. But I actually think the behind the goals vision is a little more a bit more of a question than I thought was there. But I still think it's worth sending to the tribunal. It's worth addressing. It's worth highlighting that issue, but I don't think he should. I think he should be let off with a warning.
That's right. Okay. Just kidding.
The buck stops here for TC Boxes, the home of trays, canopies, toolboxes and dog boxes for the back of your ute.
It does indeed. The buck stops right here. And I tell you what, Bucks is on the couch tonight. No John O'Brown. So
looking forward to it.
And as am I, because I've got two pages full of stuff out of the weekend of footy. So I'll be interested to see what you've narrowed it down to. I'll give you my thoughts as well. And then lines are open. Jamie from Darlinghurst, great call. You'll be in the running for the caller of the year, the magnificent Toyota Hilux Rogue.
Well, I'm going to start off with, for any coaches that are feeling the pump out there or administrators that are feeling the pump, just win. Just win. Go and win. And that's exactly what St Kilda and Essendon did on the weekend.
Windhager, what a pickup. A hand pass to Membry. The give goes back and the skipper steeled himself and then marched away in triumph.
So I know the last 3 weeks we were all over Brett Ratten and St Kilda coming up against the form team in Carlton, but they got the job done. And then Ratten and Essendon against Sydney. And yeah, you open the paper and Dave Noble and Ben Amafio apparently under heat because Jeff Walsh is there, and winning cures all ills.
Yes, it does, no question. But, you know, both those coaches you spoke about in terms of Ratten and Ratten, that was no good when they played against each other. But they actually coached more aggressively. Like, they made moves and did some things that were different. So all of a sudden, Max King, he's not left in that goal square to be the sole target. He was up on the wing in that last quarter, taking marks, being the connector. Membry pushes forward deeper. He kicks four. So all of a sudden, that's got a different look. Then I'm watching your game that you did, Essendon and Sydney, and I'm thinking, you know, various stages, the Bombers are gone. But then Hobbs goes into the mix. So change the look up through the middle. Merritt, less possessions, more goals, different impact, you know.
And Darcy Parrish the same. I agree with all that, but I think we back announce a lot of that. We back announce. There are things that coaches, like, so there are things that David Noble is doing now, changing, shifting, moving. None of them are coming to winning outcomes.
Yeah.
So we don't look back and go, oh, look, that's a good move. We're not seeing that. We're not able to commentate that because they're not winning.
Yeah, but we looked at Max King and we go, hey, you're going to Max King way, way too much. It's becoming predictable. You've got to get different options. The first four targets inside 50 in that game were Marshall, Ryder, Higgins and Membry.
But by half time, he was the most targeted player inside forward 50.
Yeah, but Membry kicks four goals. He takes three marks on the wing in the last quarter.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But he was still the most targeted player inside forward 50.
Yeah, but they still shared the load more.
Which was great.
And they won.
They did because their ball movement was better, because their contest was better and because their defence was better. And so then all of a sudden their forwards can pop.
I think you coaches get bloody minded.
I'm part of the media, mate. I don't know what you're talking about. Number two, and while we're still on it, the young spirit of Essendon was awesome. And Zach Merritt made some comments about their leadership afterwards, but I want to address their young players after this.
Yeah, on your 3-11, obviously the fish rots at the head, and I feel like as leaders, we haven't been standing up enough for this young group. And, you know, there's obviously a lot written about us as leaders, and you know, it's time that we responded and start to set the standard for those younger boys to follow. And it was nice to get a bit of reward today.
What I would say is a comment like that doesn't carry weight until you win. And when you win, then you get the platform to be able to say, hey, we could have been better here, there, or there. Mm. But the other thing is that Essendon are feeling a little bit of momentum in the way that they're playing, not just in their win-loss, but we mentioned it, Durham, Jones and Hobbs went bang, bang, bang. That the caller was talking about, the 5 minutes where they kicked four goals in the second quarter and his old man was happy. Mm. That was off the back of young enthusiasm, belief, really not knowing what it's like to do anything else than have a real crack at the contest. And that just bled through.
So the definition of stupidity, which is, this is just a saying, doing the same thing over and over and getting the same result. 3 weeks ago, we looked at it and said, why hasn't Ben Hobbs had one centre bounce? He didn't give him one centre bounce when they're going through all this pain, the Essendon side.
Yeah, and you do you realise he was out of the out of the side. So Perkins
was a game when he was actually going to play.
Yeah, so Perkins was a laid out. Hobbs comes back in, and then he doesn't go into the midfield until the last quarter. Has 11 touches.
Bang,
so
bang,
exactly. But there are circumstances, and yes, there's coaching moves. But the young boys were the ones when I go
all
back
I'm
to
saying
the
last is, one, young, when they were going like bustards, he wasn't given a chance in the centre square.
Understand, and he was a 4 or 5, 6 game player. It might not have been time for him, but the other things that happened with Essendon was Parrish, Merritt, Scheel played slightly different roles, less touches, more impact, and that was excellent to
see. Let me just read this up. Good morning, Gary. I'm not exactly sure what Bucks has taken, but ever since he went into the jungle, he's come across as the most practical and likable personality in the media.
Talk about a 360. It wouldn't be a 360, Gary. It'd be a 180, but let's move on.
Cop that after you're getting a nice compliment.
Well, it's a backhander. Daniel Rioli, breakout game. He's been in this role for a couple of months, and once again, shifts and little moves by Hardwick to rebuild and rewire Richmond. But Rioli's been brilliant.
Yeah, he's pretty dynamic, and you know, he's had a really good year from our point of view. And you look at the more damaging halfbacks, he would certainly be one of those high metres gained. What he's really, really improved is defensively. His intent in and around the contest is good, and it's an area that he continually works on. But we've been really pleased with his development, and I'm sure he has as well.
So I reckon living with your coach when you first get recruited is probably a good career move. But obviously the connection between both Dimmer and Daniel Rioli's been strong. But Rioli's paying off this faith in spades, and he's been brilliant off the back. As has this guy, Nick Dacos. Has a young player ever come in and he's actually travelled under the radar for the most of this year, and his last three or four games have just popped him up, but Craig McRae's been pretty happy with him.
Yeah, he's in his first year, and you know, they put Holman to him in the third quarter to try to stifle his influence, and the game was there to be won, and we thought we'd move him forward. And then you put him into a role where he just, yeah, the players were talking about it. He went into a stoppage and then started to organise others, and he's in his first year. But we're really lucky to have him. He's an exceptional talent, no doubt in that. He just sees things others don't see. He's an elite decision maker.
It is a great story. It really is. I mean, yep. We've talked a lot about the Rising Star group, and they're exquisite, but gee whiz, what an influence he's had.
Well, I would suggest that he is in the top five cleanest players at ground level in the competition, and that is no mean feat just coming into the comp in your first year. He's played off halfback for the most of the time. We heard Hardwick just talk about Daniel Rioli improving his defensive capacity. Now, Nick will need to develop that, but right now,
yep.
Right now, even playing as a halfback in amongst and around Howe, Moore, Maynard, Quainer, Noble, Murphy, these guys, and obviously the structure in front of him, the defensive aspects of Collingwood,
yep,
in their team defence and their pressure on ball allows him and his ball winning and use and capacity to impact the game in other areas other than just the one-on-one. And he wins one-on-ones. But right now he doesn't have to defend as much, and we're seeing his boys come to the fore. 37 touches, that clean take from clearance that went 50 metres laterally across the ground to his brother without breaking stride to kick a goal to put them in striking distance.
I've got your first year in front of me. A different game back then. You probably had to win your ball more rather than have it given to you. But your best was 34. Pretty good for first year, huh? 34 possessions. That was a nice game. You averaged just over 20. You had a lot of 30s. You had a very good first year as well.
That's not all about us, Gaz. Number five, I did not. No, number five, and the last one. We're getting to the pointy end of the year. The capacity of clubs to manage their players and to time their run, both physically, mentally, and emotionally, is going to be a challenge. But one interesting highlight that I wanted to look at was the way Geelong have managed Patrick Dangerfield, and Chris Scott had this to say after the game.
I was supremely confident that when he was feeling his best and had the right amount of training behind him, that he'd look as good as he did when he was 28. And I saw signs of that tonight. So that preparation he's had, it's easy to say it now, the proof I think will be over the next month or so. It's another reason for us to have some optimism.
And that is, managing your best players is crucial for all of the sides that are coming into finals. And we know that Geelong are one that are looking for different aspects to be able to push through. They get to the pointy end real often. But I think pump the brakes a little. Nat Fyfe, there was a lot of speculation about him. It's taken him a while to get up. So I don't think we're expecting Paddy Dangerfield to be his 28-year-old self. But having you, those sort of match-winning players in the right shape at the right time is something that every club will be challenged with.
Yeah, I get the feeling that this Thursday night is what Chris Scott has had his eye on for much of this season, given where the Cats are and the preliminary final result last year and where they want to be. Hey, Banco, I'm going to challenge. Of course I'm going to challenge Bucks. It's not about being the top dog. This is what we do here. Banco thinks that I don't have to hammer everything you say. That's part of what we do, Banco. Don't take it personally. Bucks knows what's going on.
Banco.
Hey, the buck stops here. Just win. The spirit of Essendon, the Daniel Rioli breakout, Nick Dacos and Dangerfield and the Cats. Don't forget to have the conversation with your mates, the Mosh Men's online health open line. I want to add one here. At the back of this, and this is hope for North Melbourne supporters who have got none at the moment.
Yeah, right?
It's a desperate situation. I've barracked for team, been there, seen it. Fremantle yesterday, we did this very early in the year, and then again, like, want to revisit it. The team that beat Port Adelaide and now has them sitting second in the ladder, right? This is the way this team was put together. Andrew Brayshaw, pick two. Mm-hmm. James Ace traded for pick 68 in a future third. Sean Darcy, 36.
Who would make that trade? Yeah.
Will Brody traded without, got for nothing, basically. Rory Lobb, they gave up pick 11 to the Giants and for Lobb and picks 14, 43, 47. Sarong, pick 8. So what you're seeing here is some high draft picks, which we know the Kangas are going to get. Then some trading and some drafting. Luke Ryan, pick 66. Ethan Hughes, a rookie pick. Lockie Schiltz, 57. Frederick, 61. Mm-hmm. Brennan Cox, 41.
On Frederick, he could be anything.
Wow, what an upside. Alex Pierce was 37. He's holding down defence. Travis Collier for a future fourth rounder. Michael Wald was 53. Matthew Tabiner was a rookie pick. Bailey Banfield was a rookie pick. And then you got the Logues and the Fife and Mundy who were all first round. So
Switkowski who didn't play in the weekend, 73.
That's right. Then you trade, like you go to the trade. Ace, Clark, Lobb, Brody, Akers, Collier.
Mm.
Most clubs could have had a crack at them. Maybe not Jordan Clark, who wanted to come home.
Mm.
But it's the way you structure up this side. You don't need to have – it's not all about high draft picks.
No,
it's about
not.
What you do after that.
So should North Melbourne get a priority pick?
Well, I think they should. Well, I think they should put their hand up for it. And then, I know there's a lot of people out there that say no priority pick should go. They should put their hand up and then let the others decide whether they should. They've been pretty poor for a long period of time.
It
won't be the panacea, though.
It's not.
This is what I'm saying.
But a priority pick isn't just access to a top five talent. It is. It means that you have an extra pick in the first 30.
Yeah, end of first round, maybe.
But it actually means. Well, yeah, but even if it's there, it's just another. It's another go that you get to have a crack before. Other clubs do, and that it just adds to the mix.
It does, but my point being on this Bucks, without wanting to upset Banco, it doesn't. It's not about first round or priority picks. It's about what else you are able to do in the short term, and that is pick the eyes out of the draft, and trade.
I've been a convert on this for a long time, and it's not about necessarily about high end talent. It's about how you bring the attributes of each of your players together. Now, if you can find, Aishi's playing career best footy.
Unbelievable and yesterday.
And players mature at different rates. But when you find a plan that is put together and you feel like you are a part and contributing an important aspect of that team plan to, for yourself and for the rest of your teammates, you grow. And you develop and you pop. And it doesn't really matter how you've come through the door, whether you're a first-round draft pick, whether you're traded, or whether you're a rookie.
Mm.
If you feel important and you feel valued in an environment, you will find your best.
Yeah, and the unspoken part of this is that Fremantle have got their football club in great order right now. So they appear to be a really, really good footy club. They've got a really good coach. They've got really good people behind the scenes. They've got good recruiters. And we know North Melbourne's recruiters have walked out. So all of those issues are taken into consideration. They've got to build a good footy club so that they can have an environment where these players can come in and thrive.
That was a cracking game of footy too.
It was a beauty. I want to ask you about Clayton Oliver. And people go, oh. Has there been a player that plays at an elite level, at the elite level, more consistently than him? Now, I was thinking about this. I don't reckon since Dustin Martin was – churning it out regularly, like dominating 25 and three goals sort of games, whether it be grand finals or home and away, his gap between his best and worst is the narrowest in the competition.
I'm a bit biased, but I think Pendles has been a player that does that.
Probably
that
in his prime.
Only just coming out of it, really. Yeah. He's had 10 years of it.
No, that's true. No, but not in the last 4 years, he wouldn't hold a candle to Oliver.
No, they're at different stages of their careers. But I would suggest that that you are on the money. And when you look at, okay, well, so the question is about a 7-year deal for him in the last week. You go, well, he is as bankable as any player in the competition. We've just had a message come in here about how a shout out to Clayton Oliver. How's his face when he gets the ball? It's awesome seeing him smile. You can sell players when they actually enjoy their work. Steel Sidebottom's the other one for me. He used to run around with a smile on his face, like a dog hanging its head out the window. You love seeing people enjoy their work. But Clayton Oliver is as robust, as consistent, as bankable as any player in the competition. And if that's an indication of the confidence that your club has in you and the capacity to be to reach this elite level week after week after week, year after year after year, I agree with your comments.
So when I talk about the gap between best and worst, that's what I reckon defines a player. So you'll have a bloke who's 7.5, might drop to 6.5. Yeah. Or you might have a 6 who drops to 5, who's still really important to your team because you know what you're going to get. He's a 9.5 that drops to 9. That's where I sit.
It's pretty amazing.
It is incredible.
It's going about it the other way. But if you actually had to look at the game, like have a look at a game where he hasn't performed or where he hasn't done well, he's probably still getting 20, 22, setting up his teammates. And you need to tag him to get to that point because he's clocking the game at the moment.
Yeah.
You're having to increase the resistance somehow, and tagging's the only way that you can do that.
Here's a question without notice. This occurred to me. I was reading Damo's article, If and When or Then, and If and Then, whatever it is.
2.6 million people have watched this.
No. He has been pumping himself up a bit lately. He's got to pull. I might have to ring him. But anyway, he was talking about Taylor Walker and where he's at, and that Adelaide haven't given him a contract. And then he was suggesting, well, if they don't, I'm paraphrasing, maybe it's Collingwood. And then he just threw in the end, or Melbourne.
And what did that do for you? Did that just plant a seed?
Write it down to ask you this morning. That's what it did for me. Would Taylor Walker work at Melbourne?
Absolutely. Absolutely he would. This is a Taylor Walker decision. Because I think that he has, I mean, the football that he's played this year has been exceptional. And
Stephen May in the first 20 minutes of the weekend, I've not seen Stephen May beaten like that for a long time.
Well, this guy is a 6'5" midfielder, the way he plays. His field kicking is as good as any. I know that David King's been big on Jeremy Cameron and the way that he uses the ball by foot, but he's just a left footer. Taylor Walker can go right and left. Mm. And he's finishing for goal. He positions himself really well, contested marking. If he wanted to, I reckon he would have 3 or 4 premiership contenders that would be I think Geelong are stacked in the forward line. They wouldn't be looking. Potentially Carlton with McKay and Curnow. But I think you're right. I think Melbourne would definitely be a fit. And I think Collingwood potentially. But it wouldn't be it can't be a money play for him. It would have to be I'm going there to potentially be the final piece of a puzzle that might. Yeah.
And that's where players of that ilk. I'm not saying he will do it or should do it or would do it. He might want to finish a one club player at Adelaide, but they're the win-wins. You know, Adelaide go, okay, we're not in the premiership window. We need to, fast track Thilthorpe and Fogarty, whatever. But there's an opportunity for you to have a crack somewhere else.
And the reality is that those conversations are the conversations that take place between player and management outside of the club situation. And if clubs need to be attentive to the fact that those conversations are being had, and more as the eras change, it's like, one club players has always been great, but have a look over in America. Mm. Have a look what happens in the basketball and the NFL. They end up playing with mates and wanting to put, to get 2 or 3 blokes together to have a crack at a title.
I like the one club notion and the fact that it is a bit different here, but I am also open to, that this stage of a career when it's not going to happen somewhere where you've been, and you can still add value somewhere else, and it can be a win-win for
sometimes
both.
It's a win-win, and that is exactly what this may be. And I think his next 2 years are still going to be really good. I mean, you take a risk because he's not in his prime, and he's not going to get any younger. Mm. But I think these next two seasons, there's no reason why he couldn't produce 5 or 6 match-winning performances every year for the next couple of years, and that might be the difference.
Got a sensational AFL season on our hands at the moment. The Tigers have won 3 of their last 5. They find themselves in 7th position on the ladder at the moment. They had a nice 35-point win, but had to work hard against the West Coast Eagles, who are getting better with each game. And Jaden Short, well, he's had a nice 26 touches there. He's been in very good nick, and he's been good enough to join us. Go, Jaden.
Morning, boys. Thanks for having me on.
No, thanks for joining us. It was a challenge. The West Coast Eagles are certainly a different side in this second half of the year than they were in the first half.
No, 100%. We obviously went over there at the start of the year and they were a bit depleted. Obviously had some waffle players filling in and stuff. So we knew they were a much better team than that. And we had a bigger fight in their hands yesterday. And they certainly showed up. But it was good to get the 4 points.
Jaden, you've been flicked around personally. You've been flicked around a lot this year compared to previous seasons. How have you sort of attacked that mentally, and what sort of feedback do you get from coaches around sort of being forward, back, in the midfield at times?
Yeah, look, Buck, so I spent 8 years down back in the back line, and I sort of started my career as a forward, and I was no good down there, so I always had a few demons going back down there, but... No, I haven't minded the midfield, to be honest. I got thrown in there, obviously, last time we played West Coast, so that was a different challenge. I got some good support in there that are sort of showing me how to do it, but obviously it's been different. I'm enjoying it, but obviously I've got a lot to learn, but it's been pretty fun. I get to sort of chase the footy a bit more, but obviously it's a bit different to what I'm used to, yeah.
So if I go back 3 or 4 years, I mean, I'd describe it as you went in and you as a forward, you sort of started playing the Lambert role, and when you're in the midfield, you were probably playing the Cochin role when he was out for a bit. Did you enjoy your midfield stint, and are you keen to get back in there? Where do you think you have your best input for the team?
Yeah, obviously I really enjoyed playing in the back line. I sort of probably made a career as a backman, to be honest, and then... obviously a few players went down. I got thrown in the midfield, but I'm always looking to improve, Bucks, and I just wanted to sort of put my best foot forward and try and be a good midfielder. And I sort of see myself as a midfielder now, to be honest. And I wouldn't mind improving my game in there and sort of trying to hold my spot in there. So obviously I speak to the coaches a fair bit about how it's going and stuff. And obviously I've got a bit to learn, but I'm sort of learning as I go, and it has been pretty fun. So. Hopefully they keep me in there, but obviously our back line's holding up pretty well as well. So I'm not sure I'd get back in there, to be honest.
There's a lot of things that are holding up really well. You're still living with Liam Baker?
I am, yeah. He's still at mine, so he's been good.
Is he living with you, or are you living with him?
Well, he's in my house, but I live with him. Right. I sort of follow him around.
Okay. I just wanted to work out who's going to put the rent up, because he's been in fantastic form. I mean, we're all admiring of what you have done as a club over the journey, and now he's seen to elevate himself again. Can you put anything down to the form that he's been in?
Oh, probably just living with me tonight.
Yes, that's true.
Gary, but look, I'm always telling him I'm going to up his rent, because it's been the same since he moved in bloody 5 years ago. So, but he's in great form. He's come in like a few of the boys, as a rookie, and just wanted to improve. And I suppose he's always got a point to prove. And the way he's going about his footy is just amazing, and certainly inspirational for everyone else around the club. And he's a great teammate, and he plays the game real well.
All I want to know is this, and all Richmond supporters want to know is, will you be the landlord next year, or is he giving you notice? Because we know he's out of contract. We know the West Coast Eagles are circling, or that's the report. Is he going to sign on for another year with you?
Nah, look, I'm pretty confident he'd sign on. To be honest, boys, I've sort of just left him with some space, and I've always said that I never force someone to stay if they want to go home to their families. I suppose it's a bit of a tough one for me. I sort of lost my old man in 2020, and the lucky thing about me was I was in Victoria with my family, so I got to spend time with them. But I mean, when there's blokes from interstate, I never tend to get involved in or in the way of the decision they want to make. But no, I've just left him with some space, and I'm pretty confident he'd stay. But No, I reckon he'll be here, yeah.
Yeah. Jaden, you've played in some, as a dual premiership player, you've played in some really good teams in your career, and you're always looking to, or teams are always looking to regenerate and to find different ways of going about it. What would you say are maybe the one or two things that are slightly different that you're in and around your team this year compared to previous teams you've been in at? What are the shifts that Dim has been trying to push through for you?
Yeah, obviously a few things changed at the start of the year. Like there was with that stand rule and stuff, we tried to adjust our game plan a bit to that, sort of probe the ball a bit more early on in the year. And that sort of wasn't really working for us, to be honest. And obviously speed on the ball probably suits us the most. And then obviously our pressure. We've obviously had a few different small forwards come through this year. You've obviously seen Morris Rioli, Judson Clark come through, and just getting back to that pressure, to be honest. And it sort of slipped away a bit, I guess. And when you don't have it, I suppose you realise how important it is. So just really getting back to that. And really backing those small forwards to do that role. That's probably what Dim has been preaching, to be honest.
But, so in that sense, do you feel like you're rewiring towards this a very similar theme but with slightly different a mix of players?
I do, Bucks. Yeah, I think that's sort of... I mean, when you get different players in, I suppose you need to adjust a few things, but, I mean, that's probably the good thing about playing for Richmond. Is that there's a system you've got to play, and then the boys just understand what they've got to do. You know, Morris has just come in and just put pressure on. I mean, you used to see that with Dan Butler and Jason Castagna and stuff like that. So it's just been good that, we can sort of get back to that and just trust the blokes that are coming in that they can play that role, yeah.
Look, this isn't current affairs, but we were talking about it earlier about, you know, how to put a successful list together, a list that can contend. Mate, you were a rookie draft pick in 2015. When you reflect back on sort of stepping in through the front doors at Richmond, did you feel like you were behind given that you're a rookie pick? Did you feel like the club embraced you and gave you every opportunity? What were the first couple of years like for you coming into the club?
Yeah, look, I was always embraced as a player and as a person when I walked through the doors, but I personally felt like I was always a little bit behind just because I was a rookie. Obviously, when you get drafted, you know, obviously you've had a pretty good under-18s year and you're obviously a decent player, but I sort of missed out on that draft. And then coming as a rookie, I mean, I came in with the likes of Kane Lambert and Jason Castagna, both as rookies as well. Mm. I need to thank Kane for probably all the work he put into me and just paving the way of how to be an AFL footballer. He missed out in 6 or 7 drafts, and I sort of tried to model my life off him. And obviously, you do feel like you're a fair way back, but I mean, I just sort of came in and tried to work as hard as I could, tried to learn as much as I could, and just sort of model my life off Kane. And it's obviously worked out now. But I was always respected as a person, as a player. Mm. Just you got to sort of earn your spot, I guess. And as everyone does, but
credit to you, mate. Well done.
Yeah, you've been one of the great pickups, mate. Best and fairest in a premiership year is, I think that doesn't get any better than that. Correct. And you'll be pushing in hard again, I know, for your club to be there again in September this year. So thanks so much for joining us and good luck for the rest of the year.
No worries, boys. Thanks for having me.
Well done, Jane.
Jaden Short, best and fairest. You just forget that in a premiership year as a rookie.
Yeah, I don't think there can be any higher individual accolade than being being seen by your coaching staff as the most significant contributor in a premiership season.